Every family has an origin story, one passed down through the generations. Mine happens to be a mystery involving my great-great-grandmother left behind in Sicily. I'm Joe Piazza, and my new podcast will transport you to the gorgeous island of Sicily as I trace my roots back through a whodunit for the ages. Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. Go, go, go. Let's go. This is Josh. That's Chuck. Man, I just did it again. Do you want to start over?
Sure.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. There's Chuck. Chuck, I did it again. Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh. There's Chuck. Let's get started.
Perfect. No one will ever know.
Thank you.
So this is put together by our buddy Dave Ruse for HowStuffWorks.com, and this is a great one about the at symbol. Mm-hmm. And I love this stuff. These are the ones that are those nice little dinner party nuggets that you can whip out in 2021.
Right.
When you can eat dinner with humans again. That's not obnoxious. It's not one of those that makes people roll their eyes. It's a little one where people go, oh, that's a really cool little nugget. Thank you for that.
Give me an example of an obnoxious one.
Kind of 90% of what we do.
I know what you mean, but like, what is it? What? Give me an example, because I know what you mean, but I can't put my finger on it. Do we have time? I know this is a short stuff.
I can't think of a specific example, but it's also in the delivery too.
Yeah, for sure.
And the one way you're guaranteed to be obnoxious is if someone says something kind of cool and you go, well, actually.
Yes.
And then say anything else.
There's a life lesson from Chuck right there.
Never say, well, actually, to any human.
So that's true. Or push your glasses up while you're saying that, right?
Right. That's another two-word combination that's awful, like root canal.
Root canal, yep.
Well, actually.
Well, actually, what we're talking about is the at symbol. And in America, we have the most boring name for a symbol that's basically everywhere in the world that has a better name for it than in America. We just call it the at symbol. It's really functional and functionary, I think. So let's go around the world, shall we, Chuck? Let's start off in Germany.
Yes, if you go to Germany, you would call it the Klammeraffe, the spider monkey.
Sure. Well, you have to say spider monkey in a German accent, too.
Spider monkey.
Yeah. In Israel, it's called a strudel.
Yeah, sure.
Because it does kind of look like a strudel a little bit. What about in Hungary?
Well, in Hungary, you're going to go with a kukak or a kuk. I don't know if it's a kukac.
Let's go with that.
It's a worm.
Sounds way more Hungarian. What about in Norway?
Norway, it's a pig's tail, which is a grishal or grishala.
Yes. And then it's a ghoul or rose in Turkey. So
that's
everywhere.
Right.
And in Spain, it's called an arroba. And the reason that Spain is worth calling out, it's actually in the title of this How Stuff Works article from Ruse, is because they think that arroba is actually the oldest name for that symbol that we call the at symbol in the entire world.
That's right. If you go to Spain or any kind of Spanish-speaking country now, and you go to a market, let's say, you will see this sign called the arroba, and it is, depending on where you are, what Spanish-speaking country you're in, it's a quantity. So if you go to Bolivia, let's say, and you want potatoes, you could get one arroba of potatoes. It's about a bushel, or an arroba of oil is about 3 gallons.
Okay. So now that you know that, you can translate an arroba into absolutely anything you find in the market, right?
I guess.
No. The answer is no. Because for some weird reason, an arroba of oil is about 3 gallons or so, 11.3 liters.
Yeah.
An arroba of wine is over 4 gallons. It's 15.1. This makes zero sense at all.
Yeah, I think you just have to know what product you're getting, what an arroba is equivalent to.
Yes, you do. And that's weird because measurements are meant to standardize things, and you standardize liquid or you standardize mass. But the Spanish said, no, we're not doing that. We're going our own way. Why don't you just have some of our delightful tapas and stop complaining?
That's right. But Ruse dove in and got his hands on a book from Keith Houston or Houston, Shady Characters, : The Secret Life of Punctuation, Symbols, and Other Typographical Marks. Mm-hmm. And in that is a two-part history of the at symbol where Mr. Houston or Houston, I'm not sure which one it is.
I'm going with both. Houston. I think Georgia is the only place in the world that pronounces it Houston.
Really?
Oh, wait, no. That's what they call that street in New York, too, don't they?
Houston Street, yeah. You say Houston okay. Street in New York, they're like, get a rope.
Hey, is that at the corner of Houston and Avenue of the Americas?
And you know, I was referencing the famous Pace Picante commercial.
Oh, yeah. New York City.
Get a rope. So anyway, Greeks and Romans, Mr. Houston points out, were the first people that were trading these commodities in markets and using something called amphorae as the measurement. It was this ceramic, sort of long-neck ceramic jar.
Mm-hmm. With that the was two handles.
Yeah, with the two handles called an amphorae.
Yeah, that's plural.
Right, and that was about 7 gallons. So that was Greece and Rome. Then the Spanish and Portuguese picked it up for their commodities, but they called it the arroba.
They did, but not at first. Apparently, arroba comes from the Arabic for al-rub, which means one-fourth or a quarter. And the ancient Portuguese and Spanish traders worked pretty closely with some of the Moors who lived in the area as well and actually ran the place for about 700 years or more. Get it? Or more?
Mm-hmm.
And so the Arabic rubbed off, al-rub rubbed off onto the Spanish and the Portuguese. I don't know where all this wordplay is coming from. It's making me panic a little bit. But the point is an arroba did not necessarily stand in for amphorae. It meant a quarter of something or about 25 pounds. And then eventually it somehow made the switch over to be the same thing as an amphora, which again is that vessel that's used for storage, but also a unit of measurement, usually a liquid measurement. And a researcher figured out that somewhere between the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, amphora and arroba became synonymous with one another.
That's right. And we're going to take a little break, and we'll tell you what all of this has to do with the at symbol right after this.
Well, now, when you're on the road, driving in your truck, why not learn a thing or two from Josh and Chuck? It's stuff you should know.
Stuff you should know.
All right.
iHeart Podcast Update. This week on your free iHeart Radio app. Fodor's Guide to Espionage, a 60s-era spy story of the world's first and greatest travel writer, Eugene Fodor, as he jet sets around the globe. Tongue Unbroken Season 2. This podcast explores complex concepts of identity, resilience, erasure, and genocide. Table for Two Season 2. Think of the show as a deconstructed Oscar party in podcast form. Each episode takes place over the romance of a meal and feels like you're seated next to a different guest at that dinner. Hear these podcasts and more on your free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you think Abuelita knows best? Wilmer Valderrama here, executive producer of the podcast De My Abuelita First. And we definitely do. Join us while our host, Vico Ortiz, and our abuelita, Liliana Montenegro, play matchmaker for you loving hopefuls out there. Vico?
Yes, yes, Wilmer. We are ready for another wild ride. Listen every Thursday as Abuelita Liliana and I meet three single cuties who will vie for a date with one lucky dater. Except, to get their heart, they have to win over Abuelita first.
How PG is this?
Not at all. Totally are. Abuelita's here, so bring it.
Through speed dating rounds, hilarious games, and AI, Abuelita's intuition, one contestant might be lucky enough to become the perfect match. Let's see if chispas will fly or if these singles will be sent back to the dating apps.
Listen to De My Abuelita First as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty. So we've been talking a lot about these words that are units of measurement.
Mm-hmm.
But what has this all got to do with the at sign, what we call the at sign? An Italian historian found this out in 2000, a man named Giorgio Stabile.
Nice.
He's a professor of history and science, or history of science, at La Sapienza University in Rome. Mm-hmm. And he found a letter from 1536 that showed the at symbol as used as a shorthand for amphorae.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the guy, there it is, the first one.
Yeah, the guy who wrote the letter back in 1536, Francesco Lapi, he was describing an amphora of wine, but rather than use the word amphora, he used the at symbol. And is that, like you're saying, as far as anybody can tell, that's it. That's the first use of that ever. And then the fact that in Spain, that this was the same thing as amphora, it shows that since we know that amphora and aroba became interchangeable, then that we know that aroba is the oldest known descriptor of what we call the at symbol here in the States.
That's right. And then here in the States, and we're getting to how it became like a Twitter handle.
Yeah, just wait, everybody. We'll get to it in part three of this episode.
This is sort of a long one for a shorty, but that's all right.
Okay.
Here in the States, it became known as just shorthand for at the rate of something. So if you were, if you worked at a warehouse or whatever and you were filling out your order form, you would say, I need 100 tons of whatever at this price per ton. And you would use that little at symbol. And
right, they'll say, nice try. We'll be telling you what price you're going to be paying.
And that's sort of the way it was used in America in our commerce. It was just like, this is at the rate of this, and that's what this little symbol means.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's basically what it's always meant in English, at least, or in the United States.
And it still is used that
way.
Yeah,
for sure, for sure. We never used it to equate amphorae or any kind of unit of measurement. It was just, like you said, at the rate of. But we typically tend to think of the at symbol as a keyboard key, but it didn't make it onto keyboards, as at least in the form of typewriters, until I think around the turn of the 19th century. And typewriters had been around for a while before then, but they were not like the kind of keyboards that we understand now. They only had the letters or the numbers 2 through 9 on them, all of the letters of the alphabet.
So
but they didn't have any room for any kind of fancy at symbol or anything like that.
Yeah, the dollar sign and the at symbol came about, like you said, the end of the 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the 1950s, the at sign was made or was added to the binary code decimal interchange code, the BCDIC, which were these 48 characters that were printed on those punch cards, those early computer punch cards.
Yeah, they used the word code twice in that.
I know, binary coded decimal interchange code.
So at kind of made its entree into computing all the way back in the 50s. And then by 1961, IBM used it in its programming code, in its one of its early supercomputers, the Stretch. So from that moment on, the at sign has always kind of been there hanging around. But it wasn't until 1971 when a guy named Ray Tomlinson, who was working with the Advanced Research Projects Agency's first stab at what would become the internet, ARPANET, that it became the symbol that we know and love today, which is the thing, the fulcrum that an email address moves up and down on.
Oh, man. I love that word.
Up and down on?
Mm-hmm.
On?
Fulcrum.
Fulcrum is pretty great.
So great. So his job there was to write programs that were going to run on this ARPANET network. And he was connecting 19 computers in 1971. And the electronic mail at the time was it was very cute. It was basically a message that you could save on a computer and then opened later by a different person, but on that same computer. No one was sending anything at the time.
It was like a digital post-it, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
It would have probably been more efficient to just leave a post-it.
It was, but they were trying to electrify, or I guess digitize everything.
Right. It's electrifying.
So he said, you know what? What would be really cool is if I could take this little digital post-it note mm-hmm. and actually send it across the room to that computer that I'm connected to. How can I do this?
So, yeah, he figured out that there was a I don't know if an easy way to do it is the right way to put it, but one of the things that he had to establish was how to identify one computer from another as far as, you know, the protocol was concerned. And so he came up with email addresses, basically what we would call email addresses today. He inserted the at symbol basically for a couple of reasons. One, it already made sense as at because it was at the rate of. So at's right there in the thing the symbol stands for. Mm-hmm. So it's not like some big stretch of the imagination when you see that.
Yeah, he just meant this computer to go to that one at that one over there.
Yeah, or this user at this computer, yeah, exactly. Something like that. And so the other thing was that it hadn't really been used in any of the coding language that ARPANET was based on. So it was kind of like a free symbol just hanging out there, and that's how at got drafted into becoming one of the most used symbols in computer programming today.
Yeah, he sent that very first test message to what we think is the very first email address, tomlinson@bbn-tenexa, full stop.
Right.
You're waiting for dot something, but...
Right, dot EU.
Yeah, they didn't need it at the time, I guess.
No. So that's it. I mean, that's how the at symbol became so great. So, so great.
Love it.
And I guess since Chuck said love it, that's it for Short Stuff, which means Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.